Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, this is Angela, and I am excited today to welcome Jonathan Budd. Jonathan is the Associate Executive Director at Kids Voice in Pittsburgh. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Angela. Glad to be here.
As some of you know, my first job in child welfare law was at Kids Voice. And at that time, the office represented 5,000 children with just 9 lawyers. So since that time, and that's been over 20 years ago, Jonathan, you and Scott have built really a model of what a children's law office can be and do. And so we're just really excited to talk to you today, particularly a little bit about employee retention, but some other things. So can you start by just telling us about your role at Kids Voice and maybe just a little bit about how you got from where it was when I was there to where you are today?
Sure. My role is Associate Executive Director. We have about 75 employees today, Angela. So we're up just a little bit from the 9 when you joined. And we also have a multidisciplinary approach, which means that we combine attorneys with social service professionals on every child's case. And that has been in operation since started in 2001, and every child has been represented by an attorney and a what we call a child advocacy specialist since 2005. So it's been almost 20 years now that we've had this model. In addition to that, we represent our children in educational matters. And we represent former clients up to age 25 on a variety of matters, and up to age 30 if they themselves have children, a child or children. We will handle legal and other matters for them.
Wow. That's amazing. I don't know any other, they may be out there, but I don't know any other office that has been able to extend representation that far. And it's just really exciting. I could talk with you all day about all the different improvements, but we have just done a presentation at the NACC on recruitment and retention. And so I really want to pick your brain today about some of the innovative practices that you have. Before I dive into that, I would just want to say to our audience that Kids Voice has a tremendous system in place. And don't be overwhelmed when you hear all that they have, because it didn't start that way. And so our goal today is just to give you really a whole bunch of different options that you might look to implement. If you're not a law office leader, they could be things you might suggest. And the last thing I'll say is that Kids Voice is a nonprofit. So obviously, if you're with a government agency, some of this may look a little different. So anyway, back to you, Jonathan. I know one of the things that you have focused on there is allowing flexibility for your employees. I would love for you to tell our audience about your work from home policy, because I think it's different than what a lot of people do.
Sure. And it is our work from home policy, which I will describe is probably the number one thing that employees, when they leave, comment on about how much they like it or liked it. And what it is that we offer our employees up to 16 hours a week of work from home time. And what does that mean, up to 16 hours? Well, that's 2 days worth of time, except we allow them to choose what days, what times. We have people who religiously take Monday and Thursday as work from home, depending on their court schedule. We have people who leave our office at 2 o'clock every day to be home to get their child off the bus. Again, dependent on their schedule. And they can also change from week to week. They don't have to have an approved schedule. We rely on trust. We trust that people are going to show up in court. They're going to be at meetings. They're going to do the work necessary, visiting children in their homes in the late afternoon or early evenings. And we trust that they will handle the 16 hours appropriately. And in fact, 95 to 99% of our employees have done that. But when we've chosen, when we have had folks who maybe are using it too much or not using it in the manner that we had intended, we deal with that as simply an individual issue, and we don't look at changing the policy, because the policy overall is very flexible and is based on trust. And we find people feel when you give people trust, they respond with responsibility and respond professionally.
I think one of the things that, you know, when we're thinking about how do we keep people in the field, is that we can't really offer what a private law firm would pay. We can't offer some of the benefits that other places have, but autonomy, I think, is a really important element. And I love the way you frame it as trust, in that you expect that your people will do the job and you don't follow them around tracking their time.
The only thing we ask them to do is to mark their calendar with when they're working from home. And they don't have to get approval. They don't have to tell their supervisor when they're working from home. And if it changes, that's how flexible it is. And we've been doing this now. We started this even on a more limited basis before the pandemic and before we closed our office for 2 years, essentially. We're already giving people eight hours of work from home flexibly. And so we increased that to 16 hours when we returned from the pandemic.
That is really interesting. And I think I know for a fact that there are a number of offices that are really, really struggling with going back to work and having people in the office. And I think that this solution that you have come up with there, Kids Voice, could be a way for folks to allow the flexibility, but to still have some office culture and have people in the office, you know, some of the time, but not, again, having to track everyone and be in that sort of mode. So I think it's a really great suggestion for people that might be struggling as they have come out of the pandemic.
I agree.
Another interesting thing that you and I spoke about was your vacation policy. Can you tell us how that works?
We, again, as you mentioned earlier, we're not going to compete with the private sector on pay. However, what we can offer, because it doesn't cost us any more money, it just costs us individuals covering for each other, is more vacation time. So we place a high value on time off. And what we do is, when someone starts with us, their first calendar year, whether they started in January or November, they're offered 15 days a year. They can earn 15 days a year of vacation. When they hit the second calendar year, they start earning 20 vacation days. And when they hit the sixth calendar year, which for some people could be after 4 years and 2 months, they start earning 25 vacation days per year. And in addition to that, we offer 5 sick days per year and an additional personal day, as well as 11 federal holidays. So once again, no one has ever left our organization complaining about the vacation time. And the other thing that we try to stress to staff, and it's become a little harder as we get new generations of folks in who are very used to being connected, is when you have vacation time, we do not expect you to check email. We do not expect you to be texting with people. If we need to reach you, we will call you. We have your cell phone number. We will let you know. And some people really take advantage of that, and some people don't, but the expectation is that you will. So we're trying to make it so if you have 25 vacation days, that they can be full vacation days, which is, again, unlike the private sector of law, where you're really not on vacation.
Just because I'm thinking what other folks might ask about vacation, do you find that most people take all of the days, or do you find that there are people that work through anyway, even though they have the ability to take 25 days off?
Almost everybody takes the full amount of days, and they're encouraged to do so. We do not want people leaving. The nature of our work, Angela, as you well know from the direct service work you've done, is very taxing. And it hasn't gotten any less taxing through the pandemic and post-pandemic with the lack of services and providers and all the stuff that's going on and the level of anxiety and what's happening with children and children in foster care. And that impacts our staff also. And so being able to take some time off, being able to have some time to be away from this is very important. And all of our supervisors here stress it. I stress it to all of our supervisors that I want them to take time off. I beg them not to check their email. I want them to have that time off because of the stress of the work and the important nature of the work. And, you know, the people who stay are people who care. And the people who care, they need that time off.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that this is one of those places where, you know, in our field, there's a lot of discussion about self-care and secondary trauma and all of those things. But if you don't have in your office a mechanism to really step away from the work in a meaningful way, I don't know how helpful all of that is. I mean, we need to promote all of it. But I think what I see in this policy and in how you're implementing it is that you're really walking the walk in terms of acknowledging that a true break from the work is what will allow people to stay in it for many years versus, you know, trying to overcome the weight of doing this really without ever stepping away. So I hope this will motivate people to really consider their policies in this area. And as important, what you brought up is really encouraging people to disconnect, because unless you can really take a full break, it's just not going to give you the kind of rejuvenation that you need to do this year in, year out.
Well said. Well.
So another area I'd like to shift to is really talking about career path. There's, again, a lot of talk in the field about, you know, how do we keep people engaged? And I think everyone acknowledges that you need somewhere to go beyond being a staff attorney when you have an office that's large enough to do that. I think what you've done at Kids Voice is really interesting, and I would love if you would share how it stands in your office today.
Sure. And I think what you're referring to is our performance incentive plan. And that this is something,
yes,
that we have had in effect for about 12 years now. And what it involves is when people come to Kids Voice, we have what we call an advocacy roadmap. And that roadmap details out for people, how do you deal with all the different domains of a child's life? As you know, and anyone who's listening to this podcast knows, we deal with children in the dependency system from 0 to 21, every conceivable issue, both positive and challenging, that exists. How can anyone be an expert in all of this? No one can. And in fact, there are people who make their living, for example, down the street here at the University of Pittsburgh, by just being experts on what happens with children from age 0 to 3. We have to deal with 0 to 21 and every issue under the sun, as I mentioned. And so the question, so we developed an advocacy roadmap that says, hey, we can't be experts, but we need to know what kind of questions we need to ask, where we're going to get information. How do we approach the different domains, whether it's mental health, education, permanency, even recreation? And how are we approaching this and how are we gathering information to make recommendations to the court and other forums? So we came up with essentially a little binder that was called our advocacy roadmap. And that's how we wanted staff to approach every case. And so the question became, as we rolled this out, and we saw that people were either embracing it or not embracing it, and how were we going to have folks approach it in the manner that we felt was the appropriate way to look at the different issues in a child's life? And so what we decided to do was to institute an incentive plan, which was that if folks were following our roadmap more or less, and they were providing that level of advocacy for our clients, that they would receive bonus of $1,000 per quarter. And the way we were able to assess this was we already had in place that we were doing quarterly file reviews for staff, just to help coach staff look at a few of their cases on a quarterly basis and see how they were interacting with their case team partner, whether they're an attorney or a social service professional. How were they approaching the cases and using that for guidance? And since we were already doing that, it was fairly easy for us to say, well, while we're looking at all this, can we see how they're stacking up against our roadmap? And so we did. And we started that in 2012. And the first year was kind of a rocky first year as we were implementing this with existing staff. And some folks embraced it. Mm-hmm. Some folks thought that this was not something they needed to be involved with. And some folks sort of were looking at it in a manner that, you know, hey, maybe I should figure out what I'm supposed to do and head in that direction. And what we found after our first year, when you implement something new with existing staff, is that even our staff who were earning this performance incentive plan every quarter said, are we going to have to do this forever? Am I going to be a hamster on a wheel, like every quarter being judged, am I providing this advocacy or not? We took a step back and said, you know, you're right. This is not meant in any way for you to feel judged every quarter. It's a tool to help make sure that people come up to speed. And so once you've earned 3 out of 4 quarters of earning this performance incentive, you will graduate from this plan and we will give you $4,000 a year extra in your pay because you've demonstrated that you know how to provide essentially a quality level of advocacy for our clients. And so people receive that in their pay. In addition to that, that became a marker for when someone was eligible for promotional opportunities or for the ability to mentor an intern in our office. We pay people in our office to mentor interns because we feel it's an important and that's a pathway to becoming an employee is through our internship program. And so we want to have folks who take it seriously if you're mentoring an intern. So we pay them per semester that they intern. And to get to qualify to be a mentor, you have to have graduated from this performance incentive plan. So it's been going on for 12 years. As I said, the first year, as expected, is rocky. It's now a rite of passage, and it's for newer staff, not for veteran staff. It's for new staff who come in, and it helps them come up to speed. And the feedback we've received from in the last few years from new staff is that most of them actually like it, although it's still a little nerve-wracking for them when they're evaluated. But they like it because it provides concrete steps for them to take. It's something that they feel a sense of accomplishment when they graduate from the PIP. And in the last few years, we've added other components to this. So once you graduate from the PIP, the Performance Incentive Plan, once you graduate from the PIP, if you spend, mm-hmm. if you do another 2 years, if you're still with us after 2 more years and you've been performing at that level, you receive a $2,000 boost in pay. And by the way, when I talk about these boosts in pay, Angela, this is in addition to annual raises. Mm-hmm. This is not in lieu of an annual raise.
Wow.
So if we're giving 3% annual raises, you'll get the 3% plus either the $4,000 when you graduate or the $2,000 when you have completed 2 years. And then after 3 more years after that, so 5 years after you've graduated from the performance incentive plan, you receive, after the 3 more years, you receive $3,000 in extra. And you also receive the title of senior attorney or senior child advocacy specialist. And also, which I forgot to mention, when you hit the 2-year mark after you've graduated from the PIP, you receive 2 extra vacation days that you can use in the next couple of years. And when you hit the 5-year mark after an additional 3 years, you receive 5 extra vacation days, which you can take within the next 5 years. So again, we're trying to set for folks at least a path that they can chart out. Like if I'm still here in 6 or 7 years or 8 years, where will I be pay-wise? When will I be eligible for promotional opportunities? And so it's pretty much laid out by this program.
So many people want to create these types of systems. And I love the way that you have kind of married it with addressing one of the most frustrating aspects of what we do, which is just feeling like you need to know everything and never kind of reaching a point where you feel like, okay, I'm there. And you've really, even though, you know, as you mentioned, you can't be an expert in everything, you've given them a way to kind of say, okay, I have learned what I need to know to advocate effectively and to know where to find the information. And I think that must just be invaluable, both for new and employees who've been around a while. So I really, really appreciate you sharing the details of that for our audience. It's also a really nice segue into another area that I wanted to talk to you about, which is the area of supportive supervision. Again, acknowledged across the board, if you have really good supervisors, it makes a huge difference. But again, making that happen is very different. So I wanted to kind of see whether becoming a supervisor fits in as part of your performance improvement plan or whether that's a separate process that the attorneys go through, and maybe just tell us a little bit about your approach to training supervisors and sure. How that goes.
And just so to clarify, it's our performance incentive plan, not our performance improvement plan.
The PIP is like, because it's so tied to the child welfare, like that's yes, ingrained in my brain.
Right.
Thanks for making the correction.
So becoming a supervisor in our office is only tied to our performance incentive plan in the sense that to apply for an opening, you have to have at least graduated from our performance incentive plan. I mean, in addition to that, you have to have demonstrated that you work cooperatively with others, that you have a good handle on the system, that you have demonstrated, you know, good courtroom performance, things like that, so that you're in a position to coach people.
Yeah, I think it just relates to the importance of the role of the supervisor in your office and how you make sure that those folks are able to do the kind of job that you need to support the newer lawyers.
Oh, yes. And it's so important. And I want to echo what you said. I mean, the relationship between the line staff person and the supervisor is often the number one thing that determines how long they're going to stay in the organization. And one thing that we do is we have a policy, which we've had now for over 20 years, that we only promote from within. So anyone who is our supervisor has done the work that the people they're supervising have done in our county, in our courthouse. And so they are not coming in from the outside. They know our roadmap. They know the things that are expected in the office. And they also understand the importance of flexibility, the importance of time off. They understand that from the level that they've been at. So it's not like a push or pull to tell them how important that is. It's also not a push or pull to tell them that it's important to coach people, that it takes a while to come up to speed. You don't expect someone to hop into Kids Voice and in the first 6 months sort of know what they're doing in every case, you know, and so because they've all been through that. I like to have current supervisors essentially train new supervisors. And what do I mean by that is by having them talk about how they approach the different aspects of the job. Because the aspects of the job, Angela, go from, you know, coaching to accountability, to being empathetic, to being tough, to dealing with our court system, to dealing with our child welfare system. And, you know, there's a lot to the job. And so I have our current supervisors help train the new supervisors. And we also will provide to them any training outside of Kids Voice that they want to go to. Some of them have had prior supervisor experience. Some of them have not. That's not a barrier to becoming a supervisor at Kids Voice. So that's what we do. We also have monthly supervisors meetings where we try to get on the same page. And tied to our performance incentive plan, we meet quarterly just to talk about what's going on with our performance incentive plan and individual employees across the, we have 8 different teams at Kids Voice, 6 different supervisors, and how is everyone approaching certain issues regarding the performance incentive plan. And the reason we do that and people find valuable is to have some consistency across the board and saying, you know, if you were to do certain things on one team, it would be treated more or less the same on another team. And that's how our supervision ties into our performance mm-hmm. incentive plan in terms of making sure that people are treated fairly across the office for similar types of activities or similar types of issues that crop up with the work.
That's great. That's very helpful. I think, you know, one of the things that we hear about a lot in our field is that oftentimes good attorneys find themselves becoming supervisors, but maybe either don't have really any particular interest in supervising, or maybe don't have the kind of softer skills of empathy or the ability to do that work. So it sounds like that you have all put into place a system that identifies the people and then creates a support network for them as well in their role, which I think is a really great recipe for supportive supervision that actually works. And it's a lot of great ideas. I want to pause for 1 second in, again, thinking about a lot of the folks out there who are maybe in smaller offices or don't have the kind of resource that an organization like Kids Voice has, to say that this is a bunch of different ideas that you might be able to use. If you have a little money at the end of the year, if you can only start with one thing, we're giving you just kind of a menu or some ideas from a very, very well-developed office. But on that note, and something that I think it may be very accessible to people who may be just getting started, is looking at professional development as a way to, as a really a benefit to employees. And I know that you at Kids Voice have a structure for that as well, that I would love it if Sure. you would share.
And it is important, Angela, as you mentioned. We provide every one of our professional staff $500 a year in a training allowance, which allows them to pick courses that they wish to attend for their CLEs or CEUs or whatever they're getting. And in addition to that, every other year, a staff member can apply for an additional $1,000. And that $1,000 is intended to allow them to be able to go to a conference, such as the ABA conference or the NACC conference, which they otherwise wouldn't be able to do with the $500 a year. But they're able to apply for that. And as long as they're in good standing, they get that. And folks really enjoy it for 2 reasons. Let's be honest. They learn, in addition to learning things, they tend to pick locations that they would like to see that they think are good or fun. This year is Salt Lake City, which is where you live, Angela, and a number of our staff are just aching to go out and be in those mountains, you know, not during the sessions, but after. And so in addition to it being a good learning experience, it is a benefit. And it makes people, I think, feel valued, which is why we do it. And it isn't that costly.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I wanted to highlight it again for maybe some of the newer offices or offices with less resources. I do want to shift gears here, and I'll put a plug in for bringing you and or Scott back on a fundraising podcast, because I'm sure a lot of people are listening and thinking, wow, I would love to do that. How do I bring in enough funding for that? But you all have done something that is exceedingly rare in our field, which is being able to substantially increase the salaries in your office over the last few years. I know there were a couple of factors that went into that, but I think it would be really helpful if you would be willing to share that process for others who are trying to figure out how to make a leap in salaries in order to recruit and retain people.
Sure. So two years ago or so, one of our staff left Kids Voice to go to our county solicitor's office, which provides the representation to the our child welfare caseworkers in juvenile court. And we were surprised to learn from her that even though she had been at Kids Voice for 3 years, that she was getting a salary increase to go to the solicitor's office, because we thought that our salaries were on par with theirs, or maybe even a little higher given our performance incentive plan that we had mentioned. But we found out that she was getting a raise. So we said, well, listen, this is not good. We don't want to have people, number one, feeling devalued, and number two, jumping at the opportunity to leave Kids Voice because they can get a better salary at the solicitor's office. So we raised our salaries at that time for attorneys by approximately $7,000 a year. We did not do that with any outside funding or a new funding source. We did that with our existing fundraising, okay, because we felt it was very important. In addition to that, we raised our child advocacy specialist salaries, not by $7,000, but by a couple thousand dollars, also to say you're valued too. Okay, and that went fine, and people were happy. And the following year, which was just last year, in our county, the DA's office and the PD's office were having great difficulties with staff and retaining staff, and particularly the DA's was of great importance given its law enforcement role. And the county decided to raise their starting salaries to $65,000, which was $15,000 more than what our new starting salary was. And they gave that to the PDs as well. So it was affecting the criminal justice system, but not yet the dependency system. The folks in the solicitor's office said, well, we're county employees too. So if they're going to get $65,000, we should get $65,000. Well, there was no way that we were going to be able to pay another $15,000 per attorney here. We had already kind of reached our limit with the raise before in terms of fundraising and everything. So we took a tact, which I think is maybe applicable in some other jurisdictions. And we went to the county administration essentially and said, you know, you're going to give the solicitors a big raise, which is great. We're not against it. But what it's going to do is it's going to say their value to the system is so much more than the child advocates and the parent advocates. And number one, that's not fair. Mm-hmm. But think about what that's going to do to the system that we want to have strong over time. Who's going to sign up to be a child advocate? Who's going to sign up to be a parent advocate? How are they going to feel about that? Thankfully, our head of our Department of Human Services, who has to fund everybody and fund all of this, agreed and said, you're absolutely right. We have to think in the long term and not in the short term. And they provided money, essentially amended everybody's contract to be able to raise the salaries to $65,000. Now, I've told that in a nutshell, but you can imagine how many conversations and how many meetings went into, you know, being able to convince, being able to provide the documentation that this needed to be done. And so to their credit, and great credit, our DHS, Department of Human Services, was on board with this, and they made it happen. And they were even able to give us, because we made the case that we still want to have differentials, because isn't there a value if someone's been here 5 years versus just starting, that they should be paid a bit more, maybe not the same as before. And they agreed with that as well. And so we were able to maintain some differential between people. Everyone just didn't go to 65,000. But I think that the lesson in this was making the case. If a government agency is paying more, why are they more valued than the other folks in the dependency system who are doing legal work?
To your point, I am sure it took a lot of meetings. But I think the point that you made about what it would do to the system as a whole is a point that others might use as well when there is not parity among attorneys in the system or even in the same county because then you get your people pulled, you know, you just, it's a disruption that impacts everyone.
In our case, I think you probably have counties right now where you have possibly the government attorneys are being paid more than the child advocates, more than the parent advocates. And this doesn't even, if you have an office, this could be happening if they're just individual attorneys who are appointed. You know, you could have pay and benefit disparities.
Right.
And it does ultimately reflect in the quality of the representation because people don't stay as long. And we all know how long it takes to build the expertise needed to really, truly represent, in our case, children in an effective manner. And if you have that constant turnover, that's not happening.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for being willing to share that. I hope that might give some folks ideas about how they may approach pay issues in their local areas. And again, I just want to thank you for sharing. Kids Voice has come such a long way since I was there. And I think that so many of the ideas you've shared today will be a benefit to offices who are trying to find their way forward in this post-pandemic world where both recruiting and retention is quite a challenge. So I just want to thank you again for taking the time and for sharing your hard-learned lessons.
And they were hard-learned, Angela, as you know, from being here. And I came just after you left. And so you knew what it was like. I know how many hard knocks we've had. But if I could emphasize the two things that I would focus on if I were in office now, regardless of how much money you have and regardless mm-hmm. of your fundraising ability, is the flexibility and the time off. You totally control that. That's totally, in my mind, under your control.
Yeah.
And something that you can maintain consistent mm-hmm. from year
yeah,
to year,
that's,
even if your county contract was cut or something happened in your fundraising arena that was negative, you could still have the flexibility and you could still have the time off. And those would be if somebody's not already focused on that, those would be two really great places that we've seen a benefit. And we saw a benefit even before we did these more recent pay raises that we weren't expecting to do. We already were receiving the benefit of the time off and the flexibility.
Thank you for highlighting those, because again, I think those are accessible to people. And again, Jonathan, thank you so much for being here today and for sharing all of this with
our
listeners.
Thank you, Angela. I appreciate that you do this podcast.
And to our listeners, thank you for listening. If you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out. You can reach us at info@childrenwithanslaw.org. And thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.